Welcome back to Inside the Bar Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Christy Barker, a career prosecutor from the Savannah, Georgia area. We are continuing our series on the murders of Ellen Crocker Jr., also known as J.R., and Mary Crocker at the hands of their family. When we left off, Georgia DFACS had just closed the case that had been caused by Mark Wright beating J.R. The DFACS case closed in January of 2013, but what happened to the criminal case? The criminal case against Mark Wright was dead docketed in February 2013. While there's no real documentation as to why this happened, I did work in that office at a later time. The office was completely overwhelmed during this period of time, 2012, 2013, 2014. This is a multi-county circuit district attorney's office. There was only one prosecutor assigned to this rapidly growing county, and he had hundreds and hundreds of cases. Cases that got prioritized were not always the kinds of things that we think about. An injury to a child when the child did not want to prosecute would often be ignored. And we all know why a child would not want to prosecute. We certainly know in this case that JR was being pressured by his family. He was still being deprived of food. He was still being punished in the home. And even though DFACS closed their case, he still had a lot of fear to deal with. So the criminal case got closed. Would the criminal prosecution of Mark Wright have made any difference in whether or not JR survived? It's a good question and something we will revisit at the end of this episode. You may have been listening at the end of the last episode and questioned Candace Crocker's account of what happened to JR. After all, it sounds so over the top and so crazy, some of the things that happened to him. And she is not always a reliable narrator. She does not tell things in a chronological way, and sometimes she overinflates bad things, and sometimes she minimizes the things that she and others have done. So it's worthwhile to go through this case and the things that were pieced together about what happened at the ironically named Brothers Keeper Trailer Park and what there is to corroborate it. Let's start with the big picture things that we know from the investigation of this case. Kim Wright and Candace Crocker are very obviously very protective of Mark. Kim even refers to him as master. There is corroboration for this. Kim even does that a bit in her own statements to the police. Some of this may be the result of Mark being one of the only sources of income for the family, and they were very reliant on him. But no matter, Candace was very, very protective of him, and she gives reasons that stem back to her own childhood. But it's obvious that she is downplaying what he did. The general medical care for the children was handled entirely by Kim Wright. And by the children, I am referring only to JR and Mary. It was family policy to entrust all medical matters to Kim Wright because what she claimed to have was medical training. For all injuries and illnesses, the children would not be taken to the ER or to a doctor. They constantly said that Kim was a nurse or had been a nurse. This is something they told to the school as well, so that she had some sort of credibility when she said that children couldn't eat certain things or couldn't do certain things. The truth was, Kim Wright had absolutely no medical training. She was not licensed as a nurse. She had never been an actual nurse, and she did admit this in a deposition leading up to the expected trial of these cases. But yes, for all injuries and illnesses, the children would not be taken to the ER or to a doctor. The only exception to this rule was the youngest child, and that was because the family was living off the youngest child's disability payments. For this reason, they kept all medical treatments, therapies, and appointments for the youngest child. Kim and Candace were particularly active in this youngest child's medical care. There were some things we learned, too, about the general punishment of Mary and JR. And again, there are multiple sources for this. If I didn't mention it, when we talked about the general medical care for the children, the source is not simply Candace. Roy, the youngest child, Kim herself, and Elwin all indicated that Kim was in charge of anything medical involving Mary and JR. I would note, too, that some of the information that can be attributed to Elwin are things that he told to other inmates after he was arrested for the murders of his children. Some of those inmates came forward and would have been expected to testify at trial. So what do we know about general punishment? A lot of what we know about that is from Candace, Roy, the youngest child, Kim, and also from what happened to Mary. We will talk about Mary in an episode dedicated solely to her, but there are text messages that discuss punishing Mary, and the punishments given to Mary sound very much like the punishments described for JR. Throughout Candace and Elwin's relationship, Candace consulted her mother, Kim, about how to manage the children. Elwin and Kim collaborated on how the children were to be punished, particularly after the Crocker family moved into Cobblestone Circle and then to Brother's Keeper. Everyone, including the youngest child as he got older, participated in punishing JR and more particularly, as you will see, Mary. The general use of food as punishment and the withholding of food as punishment is well documented throughout this case. Again, the sources include Candace, Roy, the youngest child, Kim, all of the government records we talked about in the last episode, and of course, the text messages in the case about Mary. Kim, Elwin, and Candace were all very controlling of the food JR and Mary ate. When I say Mary, though, the withholding of food, the problems with food, did not become pronounced until after JR's death. So when we're talking about it at Brother's Keeper, it is primarily controlling food for JR. Kim, as that quote-unquote medical professional, claimed that they were eating too much sugar, which is causing the children's behavioral problems. At no time were the children actually diagnosed with any diagnosis that would require dietary restrictions. Elwin was controlling of how food was doled out, in part because he was sharing the proceeds of the food stamps the family received with his mother while they were living in South Carolina, as we've already mentioned, and later sharing them with Kim and Mark. This seemed to be some sort of tax that Kim made against Elwin and Candace for any help that Kim, Roy, or Mark gave them. Withholding food was a common punishment, and food was often withheld for days at a time. Kim and Candace instructed the school to deny free lunches for JR. Of course, Elwin did this too, because he was, quote, pre-diabetic, making the little food permitted to JR and Mary inedible came later, and we will discuss that further. So what happened with JR? Some of it we know. Some of it we've already talked about. We did talk about that beating in March of 2012. We did talk about how Mark tied JR up in the garage at Kim's direction and whipped JR. Elwin may or may not have participated. Again, those things are well documented, the beating of JR at the hands of Mark. Candace is not the only source about JR being tied up at Cobblestone Circle, though. The youngest child, when he was interviewed, reported it as well. And Kim even made an admission to Elwin's mother over the phone that she had tied up JR and left him in the shed naked overnight. So no, this is not simply coming from Candace. JR did spend the night at Cobblestone Circle while Mark was there, and some of this was part of the corroboration. From here forward, it's a little hard to tell the timeline of when these various punishments were imposed. I'm going to do my best to go through it, but this is not chronological in any way. Candace did admit that she whipped JR with a belt and with a belt buckle, drawing blood. What she told the police is that she typically hit JR across the face, sometimes drawing blood, and paddled JR with a board at Kim's direction before defects got involved. Candace regularly called Kim for direction on how to manage the children, even after Elwin, Candace, JR, Mary, and the youngest child moved out of Cobblestone and defects was involved. Kim told Candace to discipline JR by whipping him with a belt. Candace hit JR on his back, but also hit him on his head, causing him to gush blood when she hit him with the belt buckle. Candace called Kim about that medical treatment, and Kim's advice was to put pressure on the wounds, but, well, head wounds just bleed a lot. Was that an injury that happened while defects was involved? Less likely, because it would have been visible. And some of these other injuries had to have been imposed after Defax got out of the case. While living at Brother's Keeper, after Kim and Mark were to have no contact with JR, JR was still going over to Cobblestone to get internet access for school. Candace described arriving at Kim's house to get JR and found that Kim was nailing JR's fingers to a board as punishment. Kim would use a hammer and nail the skin between JR's fingers to boards, and it's unclear how many times this happened. At least once, Candace reported that Kim beat JR's hand with a hammer on a chest freezer, leaving an imprint of JR's hand on the freezer. Kim and JR used to fight about JR taking showers. As punishment for fighting with her, Kim poured rubbing alcohol on JR and lit him on fire. According to Candace, JR yelled and eventually put the fire out, and mostly his clothes were burned. So according to Candace, it wasn't hurt that badly. Does that sound insane and crazy and not possible? Someone would have known, right? But here's one of the reasons we know that this was a punishment imposed on this child.
And he starts fighting me. So I took some aftershave, sprayed some water, and lit on fire. And some got.
Wait a minute, you did what?
Sprayed some shaving aftershave.
Aftershave lotion.
In the water. It wasn't much. And lit that on fire. And a little bit got on his leg.
Was he in the hood?
It got in the wash.
So you sprayed, you poured aftershave in the shower,
yeah,
in the tub, and set it on fire while he was at
it? Yeah, it was a little tiny bit, and it went out.
Okay. So
I
what
mean,
happened?
It wasn't that bad.
Okay.
But since there was one little burn spot on his hand, oh, no, that first bite, whatever.
Horrifying. But that's not the only horrifying thing that happened to this child. Kim used vice grips on JR. I'm going to read a little bit of Candace and the transcript of her interview. And she also used a vice grip on him. She used it on him. She used them on his fingers. She used it on his genitals. She used it on his mouth, his tongue. Question, then who was there when these types of punishments were happening? I mean, I know some of this happened at Brothers Keepers, but you're saying that sometimes Ellen was at work, so was Roy ever there? Yes, Roy was sometimes there, and sometimes she would have Roy come and use his fist to come knock down the legs out of JR as well. Candace is not the only source of the discussion of vice grips and the use of vice grips by Kim and also by Mark on these children. Mark admitted it to other inmates. Kim also put liquids in JR's eyes as punishment. Hot sauce, rubbing alcohol, lemon juice. These kinds of things happened pretty much all the time. Kim would beat JR with pots and pans or whatever came to hand. Roy did as well. She would get others to participate in the beatings, including Roy, who became Kim's muscle after defects made Mark not viable. She would also get Elwin to beat JR, and when Elwin beat JR with pots and pans, it would always break JR's skin. Another regular punishment for JR not wanting to shower was pouring boiling water on him. The boiling water would cause blistering, and we know that right leading up to the time of his death, this was a punishment that was still being imposed. I mentioned before that disgusting things were being put in JR's food to control his behaviors, to show who was in charge. This is something that Kim did, but Candace particularly seemed to enjoy. Kim would mix things into JR's food, and Candace would too. They included hot sauce, liver stuff, rubbing alcohol, hydrogen peroxide. The purpose was to show their control over him, to show him that the adults in his life controlled what he ate and what he did. And while it would make JR angry, he would still eat it because he was desperate. As time went on, JR's body began to break down. I mentioned before that malnutrition can cause urinary incontinence. It's partly because there is no muscle tone left in the body. As things progress, it can also cause fecal incontinence as well. And that is clearly something that happened with JR. As punishment, Kim, possibly Candace, and possibly others, made JR eat dog feces and also his own. So we're now up to around 2016. JR is continuing to try to get into food and run away. Alarms are put on the doors to the home. When JR escapes, Candace consistently finds JR in nearby woods or trying to get food from the trash. She consults Kim and they begin restraining JR in their bedroom at night. JR is still able to escape from the closet and into the bathroom. He, in fact, digs through the wall to get out and then would get out the bathroom window. Again, this sounds over the top, but it is something that is corroborated by others, particularly Elwin, the youngest child, and more frighteningly still, the neighbors at Brother's Keeper. You see, befriended one of the neighbors who had children that were close to her own children's age, and Mary became close friends with one of the daughters. That daughter was later interviewed after the children's bodies were found, and she told police that she had seen JR being withheld food, JR made to sleep in his parents' closet, and worse than that, she and Mary had to clean out Candace and Elwin's closet to make room for a dog kennel. The kennel was Kim's idea. They got a large black metal kennel. It was later sold after JR's death, so it was not something that the police were able to find, but he was able to escape from that too. So they put the kennel in the closet. He's still able to escape, and they begin restraining him with zip ties on his wrists and ankles inside the kennel. This is every night. Mary's friend described him being sent in to the closet and to the kennel every night. The zip ties are tight enough to regularly leave marks on JR's skin. JR was still able to escape some, so they began hog tying him with zip ties in the kennel in the closet. And they began leaving JR in the kennel for days at a time in September 2016. Candace admitted that during this period of time, JR was regularly not being fed. JR began losing weight rapidly before he was being kept in the dog kennel. In the days leading up to his death, JR was skin and bones. Even Candace could see it. And he was kept naked in the kennel. JR would say he was cold and would be shivering, but Kim would still punish him with boiling water on his feet. In the week leading up to his death, JR had healing blisters on his feet, and this was part of the reason that Candace was told not to take him to the ER. Kim had had Candace boil the water to pour on JR. The day he died, Candace became afraid. I want to read her description of what happened on this day, and I want you to compare it to some of the other versions that are available. The moment I realized he was not, when it dawned on me, hey, I done forgot about JR being there, that I need to be feeding him. And I mean, there's no excuse for it. It was my own selfish pity that I made myself numb and couldn't deal with reality at the moment. I checked. My body was here, but my mind done checked out. But once it clicked to me, hey, you got another kid in there that's needing you. And when I went in there to check on him and I noticed the water level of the bottle that he had in there was still a good bit in there, it looked like he wasn't probably touched. And I noticed he was like, it was strange. I knew something was wrong. I pulled him out of the kennel and I felt how cold his body was. I'm like, he's super cold. I'm like, I need to get something in him. I called my mom. I told her what was going on. I said, JR is breathing funny. His body temperature's super cold. She's like, you're going to have to get his body warm. So you're going to have to try to warm his blood back up. So I took a heater. I got blankets. I'm trying to do, you know, what she told me to do, and it's not working. I told her, I need you to come help me save JR. You told me, and it's not working. She said, okay, I'll be there in a minute. And she gets there, and I'm still trying to see if I can talk to him and get some more down him and just rubbing his body and trying to do what I can. I'm like, what else do I do? And I wait for her to get there, and she finally gets there, and she tells me to move out of the way. I'm like, what can I do? What can I do to help? And she's like, get out of the way. You're not helping. And I take her word for it. I said, I want to take him to the hospital. And she said, no, you don't need to take him to the hospital. I said, but I know if I take him, they're going to accuse me of all these marks that you've got on, these marks on him not healed. Candace has asked the question, how many marks did you think he had on him at the time? He had several of these blisters on his feet that I was trying to heal up, that I Googled how to try to heal without getting them infected, because I did. I wanted to take him to the hospital. What were they from? They were from her pouring hot water on them. I was afraid I was going to lose them, but I had put faith, hope that my mom would be able to do what she said she'd be able to do. As I'm sitting out there on the ramp, my mom comes out there and tells me JR is dead. And I said, no, that can't be so. And she said, yes, he's dead. I said, Mama, you told me you'd be able to save him, that he'd be fine. And she said, well, it's not my fault you forgot about him, that you decided to be selfish and not take care of him. You've heard another version of the day JR died. Let's listen to it again.
I was helping with the floor. And I come back. It was actually November the 1st. I come back home, and my mother-in-law was there, and I was like, what's she doing?
Your mother-in-law was at the house on 715 West 9th?
Yeah, because Candace called her. So she stopped breathing.
Because JR stopped breathing.
And I come home, and they were like, you need to go check on the son. So, okay, I'll go check on the son. And he was dead. He was laying there in the bathroom dead. I started ringing him back. He wouldn't come back. And same thing. It's your child, it's your responsibility. Get rid of the body. Well, why? Well, he's got bruises on him where he's fainting. They'll think it was child abuse.
Dies, who tells you to get rid of the body and don't call 911 because he's got bruises on him? Your mother-in-law?
Yeah.
Okay. So when she tells you this, what happened?
I went down to Lowe's and got a shovel, some tractor bags, concrete. Told me where to bury it. So that's where I buried him.
Now, where did you bury him at?
Inside the woods, about it's closer to the ditch, but it's like a valley almost.
Now, where is it at?
In her yard.
Well,
in the woods.
Your mother-in-law?
In the woods, yes.
Okay. It's your mother-in-law, right?
Yeah, near her.
Okay. How did you transport JR over there?
Suitcase.
In a suitcase?
Yeah, we had a whole suitcase. She had to put him in the suitcase.
He fit in a suitcase.
It wasn't easy. And I didn't, as far as I know, I didn't break nothing, but yes.
So you put him in a suitcase,
yes.
Transport him from 715 West 9th Street to your mother-in-law property.
To 402 Roosevelt Place.
Okay, what did you use to transport him?
We had a Ford Windstar at that time.
Okay.
Which died.
Uh-huh.
And we sold for $250 to some guy that lives off of Midland
Road?
Yeah.
So you have no idea where that van is now?
No, I don't.
Okay. So let me get this straight. November the 1st, which James would have been, what, 17 now?
JR.
Or JR, I'm sorry.
JR's birthday was on the 5th.
The 5th of November?
Yeah.
And he died on the 1st of November?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was 15.
Okay. Do you know what year that was?
Oh, let's see, I've been keeping this sick for how long? Burning up. I know I caught pneumonia again. Well, if we're in 18, I'd have to say it was 16.
In 2016?
Yeah.
All right, November 1st, 2016.
Yeah.
You come home from work?
I come home from working overnight.
At Walmart?
At the 605 Walmart. I was helping with the floor.
Okay. You come home to your residence on 715 West 9th.
And I see my mother-in-law.
Candace and your mother-in-law there.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's correct.
You go in the house.
Yeah.
Who tells you you need to check on your son?
Well, Candace is crying. It was my mother-in-law saying you need to go check on your son.
Okay. So you go check on your son. You find him in the bathroom floor dead.
Yeah. He said he kept faking like he was having trouble breathing. And I go check on him, and he wasn't breathing at all. And I tracked up chest compressions, which are basic training when I was growing up. I don't know if you remember back in those days.
Yeah.
It was part of the elementary school.
Yeah.
Growing up.
So you go back there and try to revive him.
Yeah.
Unable to do so.
I told her he was dead.
You told Gamma that?
And my mom.
Okay. And your mother-in-law tells you what?
We're going to have to find a way to dispose of the body.
There's a third version. Kim Wright, when she tried to make a plea deal, told prosecutors that Elwin had come home, had seen what was going on, went into the bathroom with JR by himself, and she believes that he had snapped JR's neck to put him out of his misery. What's true is that this family conspired to kill this child by withholding food and causing him all manner of physical injury, all of them. They all knew. Don't think that Mark Wright didn't know. The neighbor whose children came over to play with Mary was dating Mark. Mark would come over, and while Candace claimed that every time that Mark came over, JR was in the kennel, and that Mark had no idea JR was in the kennel, it's not credible. They all knew. They all participated in torturing this child to death. They all participated in the cover-up. So let's talk about that a little bit. According to Candace, Kim talked to Elwin when he got home, and Elwin went to get the van. JR's body was in the bathroom. They wrapped the body in the blanket that Candace had held him in and put it in the van. Because Mark owned the trailer at Brothers Keeper, he told Elwin to bury JR somewhere else. This is Elwin's version. Elwin was gone for quite a while and later told Candace that he had buried JR in Kim's yard. The day JR died, November 1st, was the youngest child's birthday. So they all took the youngest child out to Steak and Shake for his birthday and didn't tell the youngest child or Mary what had happened to JR. Elwin told Mary months later that JR had died. Candace continued to do JR's online homework. You see, they had pulled him out to do virtual school because his injuries were just so bad they couldn't send him to school anymore. But she kept doing the online homework because she didn't know how to explain that JR was gone. And Kim and EJ, Elwin, wanted her to do it so that it wouldn't rouse suspicions. Kim came up with a story and wanted to use the story that JR had gone to live with his mom in South Carolina. But Elwin and Candace knew that the story could be checked and wanted to say that JR ran away. So different versions were given to different people at different times. None of it was true. So why does it matter that there were different stories? Because these conflicts in the stories is what gave it away to investigators when the police came looking for Mary in 2018. They couldn't keep all of their lies about killing these children straight. At the beginning of the episode, I asked the question, would a prosecution of Mark Wright have saved JR? I think the clear answer is no. While Mark was involved in the continued discipline of JR even after his case was put on the dead docket, the sheer vindictiveness about Mark's arrest didn't come so solely from Mark. This doesn't mean that Mark shouldn't have been held accountable for his actions, but every one of these adults took out every ounce of frustration they had on this already fragile child. Even if Mark had been jailed or at a minimum put on probation, the courts could not have prevented Elwin, Candace, Kim, and Roy from starving, beating, and burning JR because they would have had no reason to look at anything going on at Brothers Keeper. We can all dream of a hypothetical perfect universe where the starvation of JR was actually investigated and prosecuted back in 2012, but it didn't happen. So what about Mary? After JR's death, the Crockers left behind the trailer that still had evidence of JR's escape, even when it was examined by investigators in 2018. And the Crockers moved the short distance to the Wrights' home. Mary then became the focus of all of the adults' attention for nearly two more years. Tune in to find out what fresh hell the Crockers created for her on Rosebud Place.